Martin Heidegger claimed that idle talk is something that anyone can take up, which releases one from the task of genuinely understanding. He wrote of public disclosedness of being with one another, where the loudest idle talk and the most ingenious curiosity keeps things moving. Where, in an everyday manner, everything and at bottom nothing is happening. We have a different view. We believe that the only way to reach the truth is by talking. Like a man panning for gold in a dung heap, in amongst the blither blather, bad puns and nonsense, one might find a single grain of truth. This is Idle Talk. Open your mind and then your mouth.
Good evening, this is Idle Talk. My name is Rodders. We are coming at you live from Plato's Cave with an hour of philosophical thought and debate. Tonight's topic is going to be a good one, I think, tonight. Tonight we are talking about... Can films be philosophical? Should films be left to just titillating and exciting and entertaining the masses, or can they play a much deeper role? And joining me to help me answer this question is philosophy graduate from the University of Reading, soon to be student of the Met Film School, and my former producer and co-host on Junction 11 Breakfast, it's Siobhan O'Reilly. Hello, you all right?
Hello, I'm good. I'm very well.
Welcome to Plato's Cave. It's good to be back on the air with you. It's been, what was it, 2 or 3 years? It's been quite a while.
I think it has been about 2 years, actually.
It's been a yonk and a half. Let's dive straight in. Can films be philosophical? And we want your help tonight. Get in the chat box, oneradio.org/S. Nice, easy one. Like, this is the easiest question we've ever asked. Normally we ask, we start with the show with, hello, I'm Rodders, what's the meaning of life? Write in now. But tonight, it's, what's your favourite film? And if you can answer the second bit, how do you think it's in some way philosophical? And by philosophical, we'd mean, in the broader sense, ask some sort of question about our existence or the world we found ourselves in. So in the shout box now, what's your favourite film? Doesn't get much easier than that. And the best way you can talk to me tonight is via Skype. Skype name is rodders.com, R-H-O-D-D-E-R-S. Call in at any time. Don't worry about the foe of the show. I disrupt that enough on my own. So, Siobhan, can films be philosophical?
Yes.
Okay, cool.
I think so.
Is that it? Can we go home now? I am home, tragically.
So am I.
So,
Yeah, they can, but if you're going to be a really pedantic philosopher, they'd say no.
Because there's a number of ways of sort of asking this question, isn't it? Because films, of course, they can't philosophize because they're not conscious and, you know, they can't think about things in the same way a book can't. But I think, should we rephrase the question, do you think? Because films can be philosophical. I think we can,
of course.
Start off.
Yeah, I think this is a problem that philosophers have with that question. If you ask, can film philosophize? Some philosophers think that the film itself can do the philosophizing, but generally people say that it can't, because you're right, it isn't a conscious thing. And there's too many things at play. So... change the way it's worded.
I guess we can ask, because I think because you could have a film with a philosophical context, content rather, which asks questions and stuff. Let's just look at sort of cinema, blockbusters, etc. Because we'll move on later to documentaries and the more specific elements of film. But it's all about content. If a book can be philosophical, then surely a film can. But I guess the way to address this, I think we've got to ask first whether we read a paper about this by someone called David Davis from McGill University, and he says to answer.
Good name.
It's a good name, isn't it, David Davis? It sounds like if he wasn't writing philosophy papers, he would be reading the news somewhere, wouldn't he? David Davis with the weather. To answer the question, he reckons we've got to ask in what way is language does language function as a philosophical medium? How do we go about that?
I don't know.
I wonder if
it's a big thing in philosophy.
Yeah, there's a whole branch of philosophy called the philosophy of language, which it's like it says it's not only saying what are we talking about, it's saying what are we doing when we're talking about things? I remember one of the other contributors on the show, he did a segment on, utilitarian ethics, James Kirkpatrick. I remember sitting in a library with him, and he said to me, when you say things, what is it you are doing? That was my afternoon wiped out, all my plans gone, dissolved into another philosophical argument.
He's very interested in that.
But I think in the simplest way we can answer this by saying, yes, language is a philosophical medium because it's used to communicate. Because let's just go back to ancient Greece. On my desk here, I have a figurine of Plato and of Aristotle. In those days, there certainly weren't any films. There were very few books. So philosophy was talked about. It was communicated in both, well, mostly verbal language, but of course, slightly less, to a less extent, in written language. So is that a way of answering the question, do you think?
Yeah, this has made me think as well. If we're talking about philosophy of language, the way that film might be different is there's a whole language of film as well. Semiotics.
What? Semiotics. That's a word that I've never heard of.
It's the language of theatre and film. So, like, when sounds represent things or they're supposed to suggest something, sound, the music, the camera angles. So it's another language entirely.
So in the film, in the film Dracula, it uses the. Isn't that just the same in literature? For example, in the book Dracula by Mary Shelley, it describes storms, doesn't it? And that's prophetic fallacy. It's the weather reflecting the dark and ominous mood. And any film you watch of Dracula, there's always lightning bolts and thunderstorms.
Yeah, it's more simple things like. Let's say you see smoke on the screen, that's an indexical sign that there's a fire. And if you saw fire, that would be an iconic sign.
Oh, I see. So it's even simpler than that.
Yeah, it's not... very basic, but it's counted as, well, amongst theatre and film scholars, it's counted as the language of these things.
That's a weird one, isn't it? Because it's not like... It's not like reading... Yeah, because you kind of miss that out. Your brain does that. You see a fire... on the television, say if you watch the film Towering Inferno, what a great film. It's just about one block of one skyscraper on fire.
Towering Inferno.
Yeah, it's about towering.
Like snakes on a plane.
Yeah. Oh dear. Someone's made for the Reading Fringe Festival. Somebody has made a musical of that. Brilliant. Hey.
Oh, I might have to go and see that. Actually.
I know, right? It looks fantastic.
I know how it ends. Yeah, and in the whole middle section goes.
Spoiler alert!
Seen the film.
Spoiler alert! But need a button for that, don't I? Where was I? Yeah, Towering Inferno. When you see, the building on fire, you're not really seeing a building on fire. You're seeing a representation of a building on fire. Is that it? Because you're just seeing lights on the screen. Would that be semiotics?
That isn't exactly what semiotics is, but that is another issue with film. And why it might not be philosophizing.
Let's get to the bottom of
it. Representation or not.
Let's get
to photography, it's representational. It's not an actual picture of a house. It's not a house. It's just a representation of a house.
Before we get into that, how do we break down what semiotics is? And I wonder if this... Because if film has its own language, can this language... If we can define what semiotics is, can philosophy then be talked about with this thing?
Trying to think of a one line.
So it's not looking at a fire and saying...
It's the study of signs and sign processes. So it's about metaphors and symbolism.
Oh, so it is... It's like linguistics,
but just for the visual side of things.
It's sort of, I guess, a visual language. In the chat box, oneradio.org/S, just tell us your favourite film and whether you think it's philosophical or not. Do we first need to define? I kind of tried to at the beginning, but to define philosophical—that's that you could do God knows how many shows on that. But should we just define it as anything that questions our reality and situation?
Yeah, that would make film philosophy a lot more accessible as well.
It would, wouldn't it? But we get onto there's an issue of what film even is. We shouldn't sidetrack too much onto this. But you were saying that with films, you're watching representations, and it's so many degrees detached from what you're actually looking at. For example, if you read a book, you're reading what the author wrote. If you watch a play, you're reading an interpretation of a script. You're seeing an interpretation of a script by a director and then the actors. And then with a film, you're not even seeing people. You're seeing lights that projected onto the wall that represents what's going on. So suddenly it gets to the point of, what are we even looking at?
There's not as well, you're not seeing exactly what was going on there. You're seeing what the author wants you to see.
But then isn't there's an issue of who's even responsible, because films are such a huge collaborative effort. It's weird to see whose interpretation you're even looking at.
Mm. So you're not seeing a true going on either. It's all constructed.
It's a very strange.
It might be forcing you to do a certain type of philosophizing, whereas if you read a book, you have, well, I don't know. I was going to say you have control over what philosophizing you're doing, but perhaps not.
I think you have slightly more control, because there's nothing to stop me reading the book of The Great Gatsby and imagining it, say, manga cartoon style. Whereas if I go see a film of it, then it's much more in front of me and does most of the work for me.
Yeah. Lazy man's philosophy.
It is, isn't it? It's like, we'll sort it. I won't go to the lecture. I'll watch the video. But to get back on topic, so can films be philosophical? We've kind of answered that language can be a philosophical medium. I think it has to be, doesn't it? Because otherwise, how have we spent so much time on previous podcasts talking philosophy if language isn't a philosophical medium? It has to be. I'd love to hear an argument out there from someone who thinks it isn't.
There must be some sort of crazy school of philosophy that thinks that philosophizing or doing philosophy, however you'd put it, is through other means, but I don't know what.
Yeah.
Lots of interesting glances at each other.
Yeah, I bet. It's weird, isn't it? So we're going to assume that it is a philosophical medium, and then I guess the problem is we have to go on to the, because it's a matter of subject matter. It's a film such as, it's got to come up, I'm going to be the first one to mention it, because someone's bound, whenever you say, whenever you just talk about philosophy colloquially with your mate, someone always brings up The Matrix. So let's take The Matrix for example. That is basically exploring Cartesian ideas about reality. Descartes sort of posed lots of skeptical questions over how do we know what's in front of us is real, and in The Matrix, the world is generated by computers. It's completely and utterly artificial. And one by one, the people are waking each other up and they're coming into the real world. It's the traditional brain in vats idea. Like, how do you know your brain just isn't in a vat being fed stimuli and everything around you is not just a computer-generated illusion? That is quite obviously... That's a philosophical film, because it's illustrating some very old philosophy about Descartes and making it into a multi-million dollar movie. But films such as The Emperor New Groove are less obviously philosophical.
Someone might be able to find the philosophy in it if they're a bit particularly, they have the disposition of a philosopher.
Yeah, or have an extraordinary amount of time and an overactive imagination. But that is that you have to do more legwork, metaphorically speaking. Oh dearie me. You have to do more legwork. Sorry, first cliche of the night. You have to do more work with your brain, right, to read into Emperor's New Groove philosophy. I think. Whereas
Definitely.
The Matrix is so, but that's
well, it's laid out there for you in The Matrix, because already the premise of the film is based on a philosophical idea.
Problem, isn't it? Yeah, but because. And here, there seems to be no real difference between books and films. You get philosophy books written by philosophers about philosophy, and then you get other books, like fiction books. Like, you'd never say Mills and Boone, those terrible, slushy romantic stories, are philosophical, because that's just not their purpose. So in the same way, you must be able to have philosophical films and non-philosophical films.
Mm. Well, this is like the, I think I said to you earlier, the standard of taste with art. You have to narrow it down. Everything can't be good art, so everything can't be a philosophical film, or at least good at being a philosophical film.
Exactly. That's probably probably a good point. And we're going to take a very short break now. I think we're going to listen to a bit more of this Matrix theme tune because I think it's absolutely awesome. But if you've just joined us tonight is Can Films Be Philosophical? And we're asking good evening to Martin and Peffers and all the rest of the people sitting on the sidelines and listening. Enter the chat box, oneradio.org/S. I just want you to tell me one question. Answer me one question, rather. What is your favourite film? And then we'll see if in any way that film can be considered philosophical. This is Idle Talk, live till 9 p.m. No, 10 p.m. Going time travelling, aren't we? Dearie me.
Having a rave in Plato's cave.
Good evening. This is Idle Talk. My name is Rodders. I'm joined by soon-to-be film school pupil. Not pupil, is it? What do you call it? Student?
Student.
Student. Yeah, more grown-up word, isn't it? School pupil. Oh, you've done your homework. Yeah, and I'm Rodders. My ambition now is to become a pseudo-intellectual. It's as far as it goes. I'm sort of jammed between the academic and the non-academic. I could never write another essay again, but I quite like reading stuff. Idle Talk is what we're doing, and the topic tonight is, can films be philosophical? We've established that, well, if books can, well, why can't films? But now I think the question to ask ourselves is, what's more suited as a medium for discussing philosophy? Philosophy we're defining in the broadest sense possible as anything that raises questions of being or anything about any questions about our world or situation we be in. Is that definition so broad it's meaningless, Siobhan?
No, because then all language would be meaningless. There's got to be some sort of definition.
Oh, mate, that got rinsed. Absolutely slammed. Brilliant. So, we should have like a philosophical hoodlum battle in the street where it'd be great, wouldn't it? Just everyone throwing tomes of Descartes at each other.
Would everyone be in togas?
Yeah, it'd be good, wouldn't it? I was very disappointed when I got to the Uni of Reading philosophy department and found that no one wore a toga. But a lot of people now live up to the cliche of having a beard. It seems you can't have a PhD or a master's degree without a beard. Get growing one, Siobhan.
Yeah, no, I was going to say, this is why I might not have done my best. Yeah, yeah. I don't have any facial hair.
Wow.
That anyone is aware of.
Yeah. So, we need to ask, what is the better medium, really, books or philosophy? But we've been asking you guys to write in with your favourite films, and then if you can answer why they're philosophical, then that would be a bonus. Simon's written in to say, in fact, actually, we'll leave Simon's comic, and Simon has just added me on Skype. If you want to call in now, Simon, that would be wonderful. But what have we had? We've JC Pep has said The Shining. Does that raise any philosophical issues, Siobhan, do you think?
Well, as we were speaking about semiotics earlier, and I said to you in our break, because that film has the massive stamp of Stanley Kubrick on it, it's just all about authorship on that film. So it's more about the visual language. But I don't know whether it's doing philosophizing.
Well, one huge, in this paper that we read on Can Films Be Philosophical by David Davis, he said one of the main criticisms of film is that it's to entertain. That's the purpose. It's not meant to be doing philosophy. Its main purpose is to entertain. I think The Shining may fall into the bums on seats titillation kind of area.
Did you have to use that word?
Yes, I did. It's an excuse. I don't normally get to shoehorn it into conversation.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Steve Scott has written in and said, my favourite film is Donnie Darko. That's kind of philosophical.
That is philosophical. I think a lot of the films that we're bringing up are, as Peffers has said, freeing yourself from the expectations of society. Like we were talking about Fight Club earlier for the show, and that's about minimalist living and being against consumerism and materialism.
So can we talk briefly about Donnie Darko? It's been a long time since I've seen that. I just remember the guy basically suffering from a mental illness and he's sort of hallucinating and seeing a guy in a rabbit costume a lot.
Well, that's supposed to... It's like Fight Club. It represents his other side, I assume.
So it's sort of...
It's been a long time since I've seen Donnie Darko as well, actually.
Stephen, can you give us any more clues about Donnie Darko? What I recall, it seemed to be very much about personal identity, as in he didn't really know what he was until he was confronted by himself. And I hope I haven't ruined the ending of the film, because you don't because it's not obvious that he's seeing himself in the beginning, is it? You just think, what the hell's this rabbit thing?
Yeah, but that seems to be the general idea of films that we could call philosophical. It's being presented with yourself. There's another film, Persona.
Yeah.
She's a mentally ill woman, and the nurse sort of starts to pick up on this woman's behaviours, and she realises that the things that she's seeing are part of her and her issues with her son, I think.
Yeah.
So most philosophical films that set out to be philosophical are usually about looking into yourself and the problems being put outside themselves.
Yeah, I think Donnie Darko sort of questioned, like, in the beginning you thought he was mental, but then you thought, well, actually, what is the real essence of the world? But there's a number of arguments against, but the thing is, that seems like a good criticism, that films aren't even intended to be philosophical. If someone writes a paper which gets published in a journal of philosophy, then the obvious purpose is to philosophize, whereas a film might be just to entertain. Simon's calling in. What do you got for us, Simon?
Back to the Future, 1, 2, and 3. The highly looking at the fact that actually, you know, you can go back into the past and change something of your future. Do you know what I mean? And actually be a part of then the future as well, to make that a part of what you are and who you are. Actually, it's a very interesting understanding about, you know, where we are in the place of things. Can we change things from our parents' future or past to kind of then change who we are then in the future as well? So, I mean, going back to the kind of whole, like, dad thing, they change completely his persona, because they go back and create him to be that writer, that author, that person that he was never going to be. But he goes back and changes that as well completely. And there's this part of us that thinks, if I can go back in time, and maybe to a time in my own time stream, and someone else gave me that push in that direction, I would be the different person that I would be today.
And I remember, like, there's lots of episodes of Doctor Who where they go back and try and change things, and Doctor Who says, "Oh, yeah, no, you can't change." But always there's some sort of event that happens that then corrects it. So you know, according to Doctor Who's logic, if I were to go back and kill Hitler or try, yes, and then someone else just as bad would happen, and history seems to be on a set course. What issue do you think Back to the Future raises, Siobhan?
Well, it definitely has that as well. Do you know what I mean? Because actually, you create then a future. It's like the butterfly effect. That film is quite an interesting film, anyway. But that Back to the Future film I like, because I think actually what it's doing positively, going back and changing life for positive. Although Biff gets the kind of whole, like, raw deal of this, obviously, throughout the whole time from Western onwards. Do you know what I mean?
So, yeah, it seems to raise, I don't know if you agree with this, Siobhan, it raises issues of determinism. It seems to ask the question of, is the future written out and is playing out, you know, like some sort of script, or are there things we can do to change it?
That's the problem with time travel in general. It's the paradox of time travel, because then it would mean everything has been determined. I've got a really bad example. Well, it's a good example, but it's a weird example of where this goes wrong. I used to watch a Disney Channel program called That's So Raven when I was a kid.
Oh, I used to watch that.
She could see into the future, so she tried to change things in the present so the future wouldn't happen. By doing the things that she was doing, she created the future, which suggests determinism. And it's like Back to the Future. He would always have had to have gone back in the past to make his dad the way he was, so he got together with his mum, or he would never have been born. That's why he started disappearing when he was playing the guitar.
And I seem to remember that, like, that used to happen a lot with... It seemed to be useless, Raven, being able to predict the future, because she couldn't change it anyway.
I think that was the point of that... Actually, that's very philosophical for a kids' program.
It was very philosophical for Nickelodeon, isn't it? It just proves that the premise that this whole podcast is based on, philosophy is done everywhere, even by mistake. Thanks very much for the call, Simon. Simon there, and we're going to take another short break. Can we discuss Fight Club very quickly? Because I need a segue into the Pixies song. So myself and Siobhan, okay, are both big fans of the Pixies. Because that does seem to be about... It's more. You reckon it is more sociology than philosophy? But let's not get
too... Well, there's two sides of it, because there's the Heideggerian side of being alienated from yourself, which is in the character. But the whole film is to do with minimalist living and being against consumerism. The main character is, like, the epitome of counterculture.
Yeah, and it turns out, let's not spoil the ending of the film, because I watch very...
It ends with the Pixies song.
Yeah, it ends with the Pixies song. Oh, dearie me. But it's more sociology. It's examining our place in society. And it's the rejection of the mundane, in essence, isn't it?
That's why it used the mise-en-scene of like the dark lighting as well. So that goes back to the whole language, the semiotic.
Mise-en-scene? What does that mean?
The look of the film.
Okay. Why couldn't you just say that?
Because it's the appropriate term for it.
It's like me using the word argumentation when I mean argument. Also, we're going to take a short break now. When we come back, we're going to do more about, I think, whether books are more suitable to philosophy than film, and whether they should be viewed as mediums that are for a totally different purpose. You're listening to Idle Talk live on oneradio.org.
Idle Talk on One Radio.
This is Idle Talk on oneradio.org. Tonight we are talking about...
Can films be philosophical?
In a world full of films. Can they be philosophical is what we're talking about tonight. And joining me in the co-host corner is soon-to-be student of the Met Film School and philosophy graduate Siobhan. Hello.
Hello. Why am I shoved in a corner?
It's the co-host corner. It's I don't know. I just like co-host things corner. That have alliteration. I've always had a co-host corner. Stop raising the question of the co-host corner. That could raise the issue of being and any other philosophical thing. But I think the co-host corner is a metaphysical realm that shall be undiscussed tonight. It is metaphysical because you're on Skype, not actually in the corner. I'm looking at the corner now and it is actually vacant.
I am. I'm in the corner of the internet.
In a metaphysical corner.
I always end up there late at night.
Oh, God.
Corner of the internet, a dark corner of
God,
the internet.
Blimey. Last night I went to the cinema, though. That seems on topic. I saw Superman. What a load of rubbish. More like not so Superman. Terrible. If I wanted to see people punching each other in the face for 3 hours, I would have just gone to my local nightclub street. I would have just gone out on the town in Reading. Just watch
Reading's people. Not that bad, and the people definitely do not look like Superman. No,
well, you get fat people on stag and hen do's dressed up in superhero costumes. So if I want to see people brawling, I could have just gone on a night out. There were some parts that could have been really philosophical, like Superman's adopted dad says to the young Clark Kent, basically, you should hide your powers because once people realise what you are, it will raise all sorts of questions like, what is it to be human? I think sitting there thinking, oh, this is absolutely brilliant. 5 minutes later, it's people being thrown and punched through petrol stations that mysteriously explode and skyscrapers for no good reason.
You're not supposed to question it.
It was, yes, and this is one of the problems, isn't it? It's one of the problems, one of the main criticisms, is that watching a film, it doesn't encourage you to question. You're just meant to accept the universe that it presents to you.
They argue that it's not part of the ordinary activity of readers or critics to assess or inquire into the truth or falsity of general thematic statements expressed in or by literary fictions, and that this indicates that determining such truth or falsity is not a proper part of literary appreciation. And that is a typically long sentence in philosophy.
It is, isn't it? Obviously, he missed the seminar on how to use a comma. But but it makes sense because when you watch a film, you don't sit there going... You just like, say if I go and watch Monsters Incorporated, I'm going to go see the sequel, I love the first one. You don't think, you just accept that there is a world with monsters in. You don't sit there questioning, hang on, why is that? And the most annoying people to go to the cinema with are like, oh, that's not realistic, that wouldn't happen. Well, no, of course, because there aren't lightsabers in reality. We haven't got, actually, there are now, some nerd made them. But you know what I mean? Like, you've got to suspend belief in order to accept theatre.
That's the phrase, is you suspend your disbelief for a film.
Exactly. So, but is this necessarily a problem? One counter argument is that in philosophy, we use thought experiments all the time. Like when people say, take the example of the trolley problem, it's to raise the question of utilitarian ethics. There is a trolley, say a train that's out of control. You have the option to pull a lever and it will either kill one person or five people, which one should you do? I was actually in a taster session when I was, I think it might have been Southampton University, in a taster lecture when I was choosing universities, and we were discussing, the lecturer was discussing the trolley problem, and from the back of the room, somebody put, someone's father put their hand up and went, actually, I'm an engineer, and there would be a safety mechanism to stop that happening. And the philosopher was like, yeah, but you've missed the point of the thought experiment. I've talked about this before on the show, but can films then, can they just be viewed like thought experiments?
Yeah, they are very much like thought experiments because they're just analogies. As we were saying earlier in the show, they're representations of ideas, not a film of exactly what's going on, unless it's a documentary film. But even then, the question still arises of whether I'm seeing what's actually happening or whether I'm seeing what the director wants me to see. So it's similar to a thought experiment.
So, yeah, it's, but the trouble is, thought experiments on their own wouldn't be that useful. To just read about the trolley experiment, or say the ship of Theseus, in isolation, wouldn't be very useful, would it? So would this indicate that, because you need the background, you need the, because otherwise you end up like that engineer who just missed the point. It may be if he'd actually been, you know, broad-minded and read something on utilitarian ethics that morning instead of reading Engineering Weekly, he would, I think my dad gets that magazine.
But, an engineer?
Yeah, he was. He used to build bridges and stuff, and over in mostly in the Middle East, he built a harbour in Bahrain as well. Not of his bare hands, obviously. He sort of drew diagrams that then went up. But, you know, so it's kind of a sidetrack. And there are safety mechanisms to stop the show going on sidetracks. Where was I?
Thought experiments and whether you need to have previous knowledge of the idea before the film.
Yeah, so maybe...
I would say that film is easier than a thought experiment because a thought experiment is essentially always going to... The premise of it is going to be philosophy, whereas the film, they might pad other things around the philosophy, so you could be doing it without even realising, and they ease you into the concept, whereas a thought experiment throws you straight into a hard philosophical idea.
Yeah, I guess, but I just wonder if it's just a film on its own isn't enough, and you need more background, because if you just...
A booklet to go with it.
Yeah, so... Oh, that used to really annoy me. When schools used to take us to see plays, they'd give us a synopsis in case we were too thick to understand it. And I wouldn't read them and I'd get in trouble. I said, well, I don't want the ending to be spoiled. Like, I don't think I'll
really
have...
I really get that. We never really saw things like that, I guess. I mean, I remember when I went to see The Room at an actual cinema.
You were tearing me apart, Lisa. Oh, hi, Johnny.
I stood up with this world. Yeah, they gave us a book to go with it. And to explain, because I went to it being really oblivious, thinking it was just a normal film.
Oh my God, you must be...
strange plot line.
If people...
I was like, why? What are people doing here? Because they throw spoons at the screen and shout. And I thought, why have I come to see such a bad film? And then I got the booklet and I actually bothered to read it. And it gave me a clue as to why everyone was there.
If people haven't seen The Room, it's basically famous for being one of the worst films ever. And it's just everything about it is bad. The storyline is a love triangle and it's shot really badly. Everything about it is bad. And then it became famous for being, well, people liked it because it was funny. And it is hilarious. And then the director, Tommy Wiseau, then sort of said, oh yeah, I really meant it to be like that. It's a black comedy. When really he pitched it as a drama originally, when really he's just kind of covering tracks. But what do you think does things better? Hang on one sec. Because we're talking about films as being like thought experiments. Livingstone has written in a paper that he says to take a philosophical interest in a film is to use it as an illustration without attending to the individuality of the film. What can we make of that? Because surely, if you're not attending to the individuality of the film, you're not really engaging in it on a. You're just sort of engaging in a big sort of bird's eye view style way, aren't you? I would presume that's what that means.
Something that comes up a lot in philosophy of film is the way that you're facing the film, and some. I think it might be him that speaks about it. What counts as engaging And what counts as engaging with a film and what counts as engaging with philosophy?
And is there a difference between engaging with a film and engaging with the characters? Because last night I saw Superman. I didn't think that, like, Superman was... He was boring. He was like Andy Murray, for goodness sake. And he was like, oh, hello, I'm Superman. I was like, oh, cheer up, mate. For goodness sake, you can fly. And so I didn't really engage with Clark Kent. And there really wasn't much plot. So I failed to really... There wasn't really much there to enjoy.
Well, you've not sold this film at all.
But I'm not meant to. Good. This isn't Idle Talk sponsored by Superman, so it doesn't matter. I can give my opinion. What's going on in the shoutbox, Siobhan?
There's been more films mentioned. One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is one. Yeah. There's a couple about mental health. There's One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, and then Girl Interrupted was also mentioned.
Why'd she do that? That's just rude.
Nest, but the female version.
All right.
It's just about people. It's about a person that's supposedly sane that goes into a mental home and forms relationships with the people.
Peffers says that time travel in films causes loopholes and plot holes.
Plot holes.
Yeah, definitely. I think Doctor Who is very, very susceptible to that. It's like, oh, well, we've completely got ourselves in a narrative not, oh, sod it, we'll time travel out of it. It's like, well, no, you've just made things worse because now you're your own grandmother. It's a bit like that. Yeah, I know, right?
Narrative knot was a good alliteration. That's better than co-host corner.
Get out of my corner. But, so it seems to be an interesting one. We're going to take a short break, and then I think we need to wrap up. And we're going to take a short break, and then I'm going to do a bit of housekeeping. Then we'll go to a song, I think. What do we feel like doing? We've played... I'm going to play a film that I haven't seen, but I'm going to because the soundtrack is brilliant. I'm going to play a song from the film Drive, a Night Call by Kravinsky. I just need to do a bit of housekeeping. Firstly, I'd like to say thanks to all the people who have actually aided my pleas, complied with my pleas, and written me some reviews on iTunes. Thank you to Mr. Mockingbird and Lycan. Go to iTunes, type in Idle Talk. We are now featured in the philosophy section. Yes, there is a section on philosophy in iTunes in the podcast store. And we are now What's Hot. So it's not just the weather, it's me that's hot. It's pretty good, isn't it?
Woo.
Woo, you sound over the moon.
You're sizzling.
I'm sizzling.
Too hot to handle.
Hot to handle in the iTunes store. But thanks very much for that. But we still need your help, so keep adding. Every review seems to get us a good few more subscribers, so please give us some 5-star reviews. Also, we need to know I want to enter Idle Talk in the Public Radio Awards. So I just want to know, what do you think the best episode of Idle Talk has been? Maybe it's been this tonight's one, and I should enter that one. But we're going to take a very short break now and try and wrap up whether films can be philosophical or not. This is Idle Talk, live on oneradio.org.
Having a rave in Plato's cave.
This is Idle Talk tonight with myself and Siobhan. You alright, Siobhan?
I'm peachy.
So, dialogue.
In the co-host corner.
Excellent. So, less than 5 minutes to go. Let's try and wrap this up. There seems to be a huge debate at the heart of this issue, whether films can be philosophical or not. Analytical versus phenomenological.
I hate that word.
Hard to say, isn't it? So, can you
phenomenological is the philosophical study of the structures of subjective experience and consciousness. So a lot of philosophy falls into that, especially Heidegger, which is the main philosopher to go to if you want to talk about philosophy of film.
So in the if it is the study of basically things happening, then this would be used to argue that film can be philosophical because it is a good demonstration of philosophy in action, I would presume.
Yes. It's probably one of the best ways.
And how about in the other side, in the red corner, up against the phenomenological tradition, we have the analytic tradition.
Well, that's more traditional, and it's in a broad philosophical sense. It comes from logic and analysis of language, and it emphasises clarity of an argument, which would be more about books.
Yeah, because it's more like it breaks down to be very analytical in your discussion. You would break things down into mathematical. You'd take an argument and make it sort of like A equals B, and therefore this happens. So you can almost work out...
P then Q, P therefore Q.
Yes, that's exactly what I was looking for.
So modus
ponens. Yep, that's what it's called. Weird bit of jargon, that. But it's... it's making, basically, you can do an argument as you would mathematics. And of course, that would see film as superfluous and a bit fluffy, I would say.
Yes, definitely. I don't think that there's many analytical philosophers that talk about film being important.
So having done philosophy of film, Siobhan, or a module on, what's your opinion, if we can sort of... I'm almost drawing a conclusion, but what do you think? We've answered films can be philosophical, but what's better suited to philosophy? Is it writing? And we didn't get onto the issue of what happens when you film a lecture? What happens there?
Oh, that's something that comes up a lot in philosophy of film. It's watching philosophy and whether the film itself adds to the philosophy being presented, which I would say no.
I think it cuts off the debate and isolates
it. Well, you have like the wall problem, I guess. I don't know.
It's adding another barrier. So do you think film is better suited to philosophy than books or not?
No.
Why not?
But they have their different strengths. I don't think I can pick either or.
I think overall I'd have to go for books. If I had to go for one or the other, for the sake of philosophy.
It depends what you're looking for from philosophy.
Yeah, if you want to do philosophy seriously, then you have to go for the books. But I'd say film is very good at illustrating, but it's also so much easier. Like, sod it, I'll just watch the video, I won't read the book. You could, like, it. That's good because it makes philosophy accessible. The fact that people who never, you know, who've never done philosophy at university before are talking about time travel thanks to Back to the Future, and the fact that The Matrix has raised skeptical questions, it is a good thing, but I think there runs a risk of people thinking, oh well, yeah, that's philosophy, don't need to read anything, so therefore it could end up dumbing down philosophy. I think that's the one worry, at risk of sounding like a snob.
Yeah, that's a big problem in the philosophy of film. I mean, there are some films that probably don't do that, that are really specifically philosophical, that use philosophical texts. They don't just present philosophical issues such as time travel. Some philosophers would argue that things like Back to the Future is just crude philosophy.
It's like, well, so could this podcast be. So I reckon my conclusion is philosophy film is a great way of starting a debate and also adding to philosophy, adding to the debate. Thanks very much for joining me this evening, Siobhan.
Thanks for having me.
Do you want to plug your Twitter? You're mad on Twitter and making Vine videos as well.
Yeah, I use Vine a lot more than Twitter now, but I'm Siobhan Scar.
Yeah, so go follow Siobhan. I, of course, am at Rodders. This has been Idle Talk. We'll be back next week with another mind-boggling podcast and full of ideas and stuff. Come join the debate next week at oneradio.org. Subscribe to us on iTunes. This has been Idle Talk. My name is Rodders. Good night, and thanks for listening.